If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson, and thank you so much for joining us here today. Today, I have another guest with us, and I'm thrilled to have her here. Her name is Karen Dixon. Karen, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and I'm eager to have you share your story with this audience. So let's dive right in. Karen, what brings you to the Covert Narcissism Podcast?
I was in the middle of turned out to be a 15-year marriage, and I was having a lot of trouble trying to figure out and understand what was going on in my life and why my marriage was functioning the way it was. And I was in and out of therapists. And ultimately, what brought me here was that people kept bringing up the term narcissism, and I kept researching it. And like I've heard many other people say, like, narcissism wasn't quite hitting the nail on the head. So I dove a little deeper into the different forms of narcissism, and then I came across covert narcissism. And this podcast actually came up in one of my first searches. And on the first episode, I was so finally relieved. This is what I have been looking for to help me understand what's happening. And then I don't know. That's just the starting point. And from that point on, I just listened to every single episode that came out.
Okay. So you dove down the rabbit hole of all the research into narcissism.
I did. Yes.
Okay. And you have a story to share here today that I would love to hear, to share with this audience. Can you maybe tell everybody a little bit more about the situation you were in and how your eyes got open to what was going on?
Yeah. So I met my husband when I was 20. I was pretty young, and we were musicians together. And we moved around. We moved around the country, following our dream of what we were chasing. Eventually we were friends at first, and I always had a big crush on him. He was very, very, very firm to keep this like distance between us in the fact of like, he just always wanted to be professional and friends, never wanted to cross this line. But we started, eventually, because of just the proximity of how we were located to each other and our closeness, started dating. But I started noticing just very early on some things that seemed to be uncomfortable and different from other relationships I had been in. However, being only 20, I kind of just ignored them and kept on going, thinking, okay, well, this is fine. And I'm the oldest of seven children, and I always had a tendency to be, people pleaser, trying to make sure everyone's okay, taking care of everybody. And I found myself in this pattern very, very early on, of, my boyfriend being unhappy seemingly and sad, and me going trying to fix things, and then he'd be good for a while. And this pattern I now realize started way back then. Just kind of summarizing everything, we started to talk about getting married and progressing our relationship. And I will say that there was early on, there were definitely times of happiness and things that seemed to be what I thought would be a normal relationship. But getting on further into after we did get married and things, there were just clear signs that something was off. And so we started therapy within like 3 months of being married. And there's just this constant pattern of him being unhappy and me not understanding what was happening and why, and me trying to fix it. And it was a constant over and over and over again. So as things progressed, then I started to just give up on understanding what was happening and just settled into this life of, okay, this is married life. It's hard, then you have to work for it. And that's okay. That's fine. I was always a musician. I was always a very big dreamer. I never necessarily considered myself to be a stay-at-home mom. Always thought I would want kids eventually, but always had this dream of, oh, you know, we're going to have babies and we're going to go and we're going to travel the world in our little tour bus and play our music. And, you know, that was the life that I had in my head. And that is the life that I thought that he had also in his vision of what our life would be. You know, that's what I had always dreamt of. And I never really questioned it at all as being a problem. But after, you know, it took a long time actually to convince him to even like want to have children, because for a long time he kind of like, he like wanted to delay it. He kept giving excuses of why, you know, why he didn't want to have children. And eventually we did. I noticed a huge regression in his interest in me after that point. So I would say like after we had babies was where a huge turning point for me was that I really needed to figure out how to get help. Now we're talking, I mean, that was year three of our marriage, and now this went on for 15 years after. So it's kind of, it's funny because you have this like in your mind, at least in my mind now, a very clear story of how things happen. And then you go and try to recall it. And it's so massive that I'm like, oh no, I'm faced with that. Where do we start right now? I feel like I'm rambling.
But that's why I have over 200 episodes. I mean, you share little bits and little pieces and then you go, oh my gosh, yeah, that happened. Oh my gosh, this, like, and even in the healing journey, that's exactly what happened. So I love that you said that, because even as somebody is getting their eyes open to what's going on, and it can seem so clear one minute, and then the next minute, it's like a jumbled mess. It's like, okay, wait, I can't make sense out of anything. So I love that you said that.
Yeah, it's crazy because it is so funny because I'm just like, geez, where I, my mind is going off in these little like side roads. I'm like, okay, well, I could go this way.
Right.
But ultimately, to sum it up, something was wrong. And I just didn't know what it was. And I could not figure it out. So I just settled for this life of, I'm going to be unhappy and he's unhappy, but I don't know why he's unhappy. So I'm going to do everything I can to make this person like me more or like this life. And so, and I'll be honest, I mean, this is the first time publicly I am speaking of this. I kept this a secret from everybody. Nobody knew what I was going through. Not even my parents, not my siblings. No one. Everyone thought from the outside it looked like a really, really normal, happy marriage. I mean, so many people idolized us. I did write down some points that stick out to me. I remember sitting in the hallway with him. And early on, I did think, like, it's funny because even though all of these negative things were happening, which I will get into, I still thought we were really happy. And I remember sitting there with him going like, oh, at least we're so lucky. We're not like so-and-so and we're not like so-and-so. And I remember him looking at me stone cold in the face going, we have our problems. And he walked away. And I was just like, whoa, wow. Whoa.
Yeah.
what problems are we having here? And that was before I really like understood what I was dealing
with. Right. He couldn't just allow things to be okay.
No, it was not, allowed them to be okay. So throughout our marriage, pretty much what happened was I wanted to get back into music. It turned into it was a struggle every time. So I did stay home with my babies for a couple years, and then the time came for me to resume my career. And it was a fight. It was a struggle. It was every time I wanted to try to do something for myself or leave or work or only when it was coming to the music, he would not yell at me, not scream at me, not tell me I can't do it. But it was then days of sulking and disappointment and silence and all kinds of strange things. So like if I went and had a show, I learned to prepare myself for the aftermath of what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it just basically made my existence very meaningless, I guess, because you would think that your partner would want to support you in a journey and a dream that you've always had and always pursued. And even if it wasn't that, even if I wanted to pursue a new dream, you would think like, oh, that your partner would be there for you to lift you up. And his favorite phrase was, I tolerate your music. I don't support it. I'm not your cheerleader. And I remember saying to him, but you should be my cheerleader.
Like, right.
You know,
that's what this is supposed to be.
Yeah. But he just I don't know. I mean, he'd be pretty honest sometimes, and he would just be like, "I'm jealous, you know, that you shouldn't get to do that. I can't do that." I'm like, "Well, you can do it. I would support you. You know, if you want to go do that, you know." So, the biggest thing that I now look back on and understand, there were things that I think that were punishments. You know, physical touch was never a thing. I mean, it was something that I had to initiate always. And I one time decided to see how long I could go without like any kind of intimacy. And we went a whole year if I didn't, you know, initiate it. And I realized now looking back, the pattern was pretty much I was doing something that he didn't approve of. And then he would withhold that as a kind of, I guess, a means of maybe showing his disappointment. So I got used to a marriage pretty much of no physical touch at all. And the kids were very much planned. The huge, you know, a huge wake up call for me was, after I had the babies, it was, you know, you would think that your husband would want to take care of you and make sure you're okay. He came to me one day and said that he was so upset and disappointed in me because I was sick. I almost died. My baby almost died for my first child. He said I was sick and I couldn't take care of him anymore and I wasn't there for him anymore. And he felt like I had just kind of abandoned, I know, my responsibilities. And so that was another huge like slap in the face. I'm like, whoa, what is that? Like, I don't get this, you know? I started researching. I you're talking a decade later until I figured out what this was though. So I've been like 10 years. Therapist after therapist after therapist, getting nowhere. He'd go to therapy. He would go through the motions. He'd be okay for like a week or two. And I think it was just enough to get me to like, oh, I think we're making progress. I think we're getting somewhere. And and then it would just revert back to the way it was. It was my current therapist who is so funny. I was sitting in her office and I was like, I don't know. I really think that he does better when he's in therapy because when he comes, I mean, I really think he puts in the work because he'll try for a couple of weeks and you can tell he's making changes. And then, but then it goes away. So I think he needs to keep going. And she looks at me, she's like, Karen, do you understand? Do you know why when he gets in here, it all makes sense, but when he goes home, it doesn't? And I was like, no, I don't get this at all. I think he's trying. She's like, no, because she did, you know, she did get to have him in some sessions. So it wasn't like, I think that the part of this that was good for me was, it wasn't just me giving my story. There was both sides were able to be seen and heard and worked on. So I finally could get somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then when she explained to me, again, you know, she was explaining to me narcissism and things like that. And then I found this particular version of narcissism. And then I went back to my therapy session. I was like, I like shared the podcast. And I was like, listen, and I sent the podcast to my parents. I sent it to everybody. I was just like, I figured it out.
Well, I'm glad that was there for you. Did she answer that question then of why he keeps getting better in therapy?
Yeah, she said, narcissists are very, very good at putting on a show and knowing when to behave and when not to behave for this particular, I guess, kind of narcissist, because I think overt narcissists from my experience, because I have dated, unfortunately, some after the fact, and it's a very different type of personality. That this is my problem mostly with my ex is that he was so very charming to everybody. I mean, everyone. And it's the mask is just on. And then whenever the doors are closed, it's off. And I think that's my biggest problem with trying to explain this to people is because no one can wrap their minds around it. Mm-hmm. They're just like, but I don't understand. He's so nice. I'm like, yeah, I know that. That is it. And it even happened very recently. I was out with my children and he and I ended up being in the same building for an event. And a mutual friend of ours who kind of knows what's going on, she came up to me and she was like, hey, I just saw your ex out there. I just want to let you know. It sounds like he's really, really trying and he's trying to be a good co-parent. And I see that you know, that's great. You guys have such a great relationship. And I looked at her and I was like, no, this is what I'm talking about. And then I pulled up the text messages that he had sent me a few hours before and showed them to her. And she was like, oh, I was like, yeah, this is the only way people can wrap their minds around it is if that example happens where they right. see one side and then I can prove and say, no, look, this is what I'm dealing with. So, that was pretty wow. crazy to me.
That is crazy. Yeah. And I'm glad that your friend was able to see that then. You talked about, you know, you protected everybody from this. And so I imagine you were living in isolation through a lot of this.
I was extremely lonely. You know, the last 6 years of the marriage, he ended up having a really, really long affair. And I remember just, I did try to forgive and I thought maybe we could get past it and move on. But it just turned into a pathological lying constantly over and over and over and over again. So that's what pushed me into trying to get out because initially, I accepted it and then brought him. I freed him and I gave him a chance. I gave him 7 chances, I think, where he came back into the house and then I tried again and then I found out he's lying. It got to the point where like I had physical proof of the affair. I mean, I had text messages. I had reached out to her and confirmed and he was still denying. And so the final straw was, I think it was 2 years ago now. He was staying in the house. I filed for divorce actually in 2020. I never reconciled. I never withdrew the filing because I sent him a list of stipulations where these would have to be met before I would even consider reconcile. And one of them was completely cut off contact with this person. Never speak to this person again. Do not ever be in the same space with them. And I need proof that this has happened by a third party that witnesses it. Like I wanted him to have a therapist walk him through the breaking up process. It never happened. So it was just like, I never did anything, but I did allow him to come back. We have children. So I allowed him back in the house because, you know, giving the sob story, like, we broke up. We're done. I have nowhere to live though. I need to come back. I have to be to my children. I'll be homeless. So I let him stay in a guest bedroom for a while he looked for a house. But it wasn't really, he wasn't looking. I mean, it was just a ploy to kind of get me to try to hold on longer. And I did. I mean, it worked. It worked. It was like 7 times. I mean, I look back at it. I'm like, how did I do this 7 times? Like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
But it was that hope. I'm very faithful and I'm very devout to those vows that I took. And I did not want to, I wanted that to work so badly. I did not want to be divorced.
There's nothing wrong with you for wanting a marriage to work. Like there's nothing wrong with holding on to that hope. And I tell people that all the time is you are not broken just because you really wanted to believe in your partner.
Yeah. And that's really hard to accept. I mean, it's hard to tell yourself it's okay that you did that because it was painful. I mean, that's the most painful thing I've done. I don't know how I did that so many times and have, it's basically just like getting cheated on 7 times over and over and over and having somebody choose somebody else constantly. And you were never first. Yeah.
What
happened was, he called me. And so my one song that I put out first, which is Print Your Name and Sign, not the other one that I think that you listened to, that song was about he called me thinking I was her and had a full 3-minute conversation with himself, thinking he's talking to her. I mean, the things that he was saying, I couldn't even believe. I dropped to the floor. I was shaking because he was just going off on, you know, I love you and you're cheating on me, all this stuff. And I was like, wait a minute. It took me a second to realize he wasn't talking to me. He was talking to this other woman. And I don't know why I timed it, but I did. It was 3 minutes. And I finally stopped him and I was like, and I won't use his name on here, but I was like, this is not who you think it is. Like, this is Karen. And it went silent. And then this is the gaslighting part of my life, which happened over and over again. He goes, what did you hear? Tell me everything you heard. I need to know what you heard. I was like, no, I am not repeating this. He's like, I don't think that you heard everything. And I think you misheard what you just heard. I was like, nope, I did not. Wow. And I said, he had our children with him at the time. I said, bring back the boys. Do not enter this house again. You know, and he came and dropped the boys off and he did leave. But crazy enough, a year later, I let him come back in the house again.
Wow.
And you know what? I was, then of course it all happened again. And then that was the final time I was like done. So now it took that many times for things to be, and we're almost finalized with everything. And he has his own house now and I have my house and 50-50 custody, which let me tell you, the divorce process was not easy. It was, and we're still not done with it, obviously, but, it's, you know, you would think, like, even little things like you wanted my wedding dishes. Like, why? You've made fun of these wedding dishes for 15 years. Anytime I want to use them, make fun of me why I'm not using paper plates. And now you want to come and take these dishes that mean nothing to you.
Because you know? It's not about the dishes, it's about making you pay. So what you're describing is a perfect example of what, you know, I'll call a yo-yo relationship, because when you are in this environment with a covert narcissist who manipulates and shifts and moves the goalpost and circular conversations and word salad and all these things, you feel like a yo-yo because you let him back in and you're like, okay, maybe we can do this. Maybe there's hope. Maybe I can hang on to this. And then it's gone again. And then it's back. And then it's gone again. And it is just like a yo-yo coming back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly, that is the only way to describe it. And it's exhausting, you know?
It is exhausting.
And
yeah.
I was so tired. And, you know, you asked if I was isolated. Yeah. I mean, I hid in my bedroom for years. I didn't come out. If he was there, I would not come out. If he left, I would come out. And obviously I had to do things with my children, and I, you know, I didn't neglect them whatsoever. I mean, they were my everything in my life. I mean, I them, and then, you know, this, my music was there, but I couldn't do it. I mean, I couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. I was stuck there in central Pennsylvania. Of course I was performing live locally and things, but it was not where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I was crying in my room on the edge of the bed, and I was just so upset and so sad. And my friend called me, and she, you know, she's been there for me for years, biggest fan of my music ever. And she's like, Karen, I'm babysitting for somebody, and I think it's someone important. And I'm like, okay. She's like, they're music. I'm like, okay. And she's like, I was like, well, who? And she's like, well, I don't know. I was like, well, find out. Who are you babysitting for? So she calls me back and she's like, okay, it's CEO of Warren or something. I'm like, excuse me. And this is in central Pennsylvania, so it wasn't making sense to me whatsoever. She's like, yeah, it's the CEO of Warner Nashville. I was like, I'm sorry, you're telling me you're babysitting right now for the CEO of Warner Nashville? She's like, yeah. And I asked him if he would listen to your song. So I was like, what? You don't do that. She's like, well, I did. And I was like, well, what do you say? She's like, yes. He said, yes. I was like, all right. So that, I mean, it's crazy. I've not been I wasn't raised to be like in the church necessarily. And I didn't have a full like Christian background, but you know, I did a lot more praying in the last like 6 years, you know? And it was funny because I was just like, literally was just like sitting there praying, please, I need just something to like, what do I do? Like, what do I do? And this phone call happened. And then this man listened to my demo and he brought me to Nashville. He brought me to his house and met his family. And he looked at me, he was like, why aren't you here in Nashville? I was like, and I wasn't going to get into my whole story of my marriage.
Right. Well, let me tell you the reasons.
It's like, I really wanted to be here, but I couldn't get here. And he was just like, you need to be here. If you can do this, if you can get here, I need you to be here every month for the next year. Show me you can do this. Show me you want this. I think that you're going to make it. You're going to go really far. There's no reason you can't. And he's like, I don't tell that to anybody else. I don't think that you would.
Right.
I believe you. So I took that as my sign. I took that as my kick in the butt to like, what are you doing? You know? And so from that moment on, I just plowed forward with everything. I was like, you know what? I don't want my children to grow up seeing me crying in a bedroom for years and years and years, not doing anything about the fact that her father is out there, you know, having this affair, and I'm sad and I'm not following my dreams and I'm literally doing nothing. And so I just took it. I took that chance and I ran with it. And I brought my kids with me, you know, on my custody times. I left them back, which was hard. I've never really been away from my children that long, you know, a few days here and there. But it seemed worth it in the end to show them, like, hey, if you have dreams, you go for them, and I will support you in that always. And it doesn't matter if you want to go be an astronaut. This, we get one life on this planet, and we, who is someone else to tell us that our dreams are ridiculous, or who is someone else to say, sorry, no, you have to live this stay-at-home life that you didn't want. Now, here's the thing too, like, I have family and people that are stay-at-home moms, and that's great, and they love it, and I think that's awesome. If that's what you want to do and you want to be, that's, you should have that choice as well. Like, it's not like we're women, we have to go out and work, but necessarily if we want to stay home and we have the means to take care of our kids, that's great too. Like, I'm not saying one's better than the other. But for me, I like to work and I like to be out there sharing, my song. So anyway, that's, I took that and I ran with it. And I took off and was like, that's it. And I filed and finalized divorce. I got a lawyer, which I'd never done before. Scariest moment in my life. That was the first time that, he got physical with me and actually like came, his mom had to pull him back. I was visiting them for Father's Day. I wasn't really visiting. I was bringing the kids, Father's Day gifts, and I delivered them, and he, got really aggressive, and I decided that I wasn't safe anymore in some physical standpoint. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I got an attorney, and that really helped to honestly move things forward.
Well, sure. The message that you're giving here is that follow your dreams, follow your heart. You do only have one life to live here. And why are we spending all of our energy living it on somebody else's rules, somebody else's terms, you know, somebody else's expectations and constantly changing needs and all of this. And so I love that message. Tell us about your song, the song Here I Am.
Yeah, Here I Am. I wrote that on one of the very, very first trips to Nashville that I took. My writing team sat me down and they were basically like, you need to write an honest song, because I have never written anything about my personal life. I've always written about other people's lives. You know, mm-hmm. I was so scared to go into them, but they sat me down and I sobbed and I cried the entire way through that session because I had never told anybody what had happened at all. And, went through everything, went through the affair, the cheating, the him telling me that I'm too masculine because of my ambition and he's not attracted to me, and, told him all the things, you know, that no one had ever known about, like, and the song Here I Am came out of that. And it is a song about just saying no, like no to the people that are putting you down, not listening to the people that tell you what your direction should be in life and who they think you should be. Or it's a song about, yeah, I mean, not to be cliche, but chasing your dreams, because what else are we here for? You know, who is someone to say that your ideas and dreams are ridiculous? You know, everyone listens to music. Someone has to make it, you know, everyone, maybe not everyone likes art, but art is everywhere. Someone has to make the art. Everyone needs doctors, scientists, lawyers. Like we're a big world and we're diverse. And so the song is basically about embracing that diversity and lifting each other up. And if you come across someone that's putting you down, just try to move away from that, close them off.
You don't have time for that. Yeah.
No.
I don't have time for that. I'm too busy chasing my dreams.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but I'm hoping, I really, if I do anything with this music in my career, it's to help any other person out there that might have been trapped like I was to move forward and get out of it and know that there's light on the other side. You can get there. It's just a lot of hard work and a lot of preparation, and it's not easy, but you can get there. So.
Okay. Karen, thank you so much for sharing your story here. And if people want to find you and find, you know, your music and the work that you're doing, how will they find you?
I can be found pretty much anywhere on social media at Karen Dixon Music. And my name is spelled a little bit differently. So it's CarynDixon. So Karen Dixon Music.
Okay. And that will be in the show notes for this episode too, so that people have that, you know, in front of them. So Karen, thank you so much. for sharing your story here. This is another message of hope, another story of hope, you know, for the people out there who are trapped and in that isolation, to know, yes, there are ways out. Yes, you can do it, even if you're isolated to the degree that you were. And yet those tiny little doors started opening for you, and you've got to be willing to step through those doors.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for being on here. This was great. And I hope that somehow my message can be inspiration to somebody else.
Absolutely. All right. Everyone out there, thank you so much for listening. And I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG, as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.